In 1954, a man who had landed at the Tokyo International Airport was detained by officials after his passport seemed off. Upon inspection, the country of origin on the passport was Torrid. If you haven't heard of the country, don't worry, the Japanese officials hadn't either. When asked to point to it on the map, he indicated he was from a region between France and Spain that is known as Andorra. But he emphatically claimed that Andorra was not his homeland. Torrid was. Officials looked back at his passport. Inside there were stamps from a number of countries over the years. The man also spoke several languages and insisted he had been to Japan on business many times before. In his wallet there were denominations of currency from several different European countries. His story was compelling. It just didn't make sense. They detained him for the evening so they could do more research and posted two guards outside his hotel room overnight to ensure he didn't go anywhere. The next morning, when the guards entered his room, the man and his suitcase were gone. In fact, there was no evidence he had been in the room at all. Was this a man who somehow visited us from another dimension, a weary, multidimensional traveler who had temporarily lost his way? You might have heard this story before, as it is more commonly called the Man from Torrid. It's been told for years as an unsolved mystery, possible proof of a multiverse. Compelling stuff, except it isn't true. Upon further inspection, the Japanese did detain a man who had made some wild claims like these. But they discovered he was just a regular con man on the run. His real name was John Zegras. He did a year in jail for this stunt. It just took me a little Google sleuthing to discover the story that I just told you was a lie. But that doesn't stop people from hearing about it and believing it blindly. So how did people find out this Man from Torrid's story was funny business? Well, the story lacks a few hallmarks of truth. It wasn't independently verified, it was inconsistent in its telling, and the motivations of the man were never fully explored. Maybe he was a multidimensional traveler, or, more simply, a clever con man. Why couldn't the second be true? The clincher, though, was that in the lie version of the story, the man disappears. How could we follow up on that? The story ends in a mysterious dead end. If we want to know what John and Denise were covering up, and how Hank is involved, we need to separate ourselves from the fantastical version of the story we've heard. Let's get away from aliens, UFOs, intimidating men in suits, and mystery medals. Let's talk facts. The military covered something up. Why couldn't John? This is Crashed in Roswell, Survivors in a Misunderstood City. There was a line in the email I received from Ethan that haunted me a bit. The paragraph started with, "In the first season, you had an interview with John where he mentioned his brother Hank. Then later in the paragraph, he hit me with the truth right in the gut. Hank had a lot of skeletons in his closet. Don't all families have a few skeletons in the closet? And if you don't, then perhaps you don't know about them yet." What John lied about, and subsequently Denise by omission, had to do with Hank. There was something in his story that did not line up. So let's look at the facts, at what we know about Hank. Hank was in the military. This was pretty well confirmed by the pictures I saw in John's home when I first visited, and it wasn't a stretch to believe it even without the pictures. During the period that Hank lived, there were a lot of young men drafted into the military. It was rather commonplace. Second, we know that Hank died young, after his military service. And we also know that Hank had a family, as evidenced by Denise and her son, Ethan. Last, we know that Hank's family was not close to John. John never mentioned he had a niece to me, and Denise came out of the woodwork upon his death. Even if they were in contact with each other prior to his death, Denise and her family weren't particularly close to John. Those are all the facts we know about Hank thus far, or at least we think we know about Hank thus far. The trouble with Hank's story, and John's for that matter, is the unbelievable nature of it all. This is a common problem with the UFO lore. So much of what we know comes from first-hand or second-hand witnesses. Witnesses are unreliable. And often witnesses can claim something that they thought was important, only to later discover it wasn't. Once a witness makes a claim, such as seeing UFOs or alien bodies, they are forever tied to it. Take Bob Lazar. His story is well documented and recorded. He reported being a witness to alien spacecraft while working at Area 51. He claims to have seen none-of-this-world materials, technology, and much, much more. Aside from sketches he has drawn from memory, none of his story has been corroborated with physical evidence. Today, he tries to live a quiet life, but his personal life has been marred by his connection with the UFO story. And he's just one of many stereotyped by the UFO conspiracy theorist label. Today, society seems more forgiving when it comes to those who make claims about UFO sightings. We at least leave the door open for the possibility of something unbelievable flying in the skies. However, there is a group of people who have been ostracized from society because of their stories, and it is a group of people I believe John and his family would sympathize with all too well. Abductions. My thanks to our Season 3 sponsors, the City of Roswell. The City of Roswell wants you to know that there is so much happening here in Roswell that you may not even be aware of. Like, for example, did you know that we are one of the most affordable getaway destinations in the Southwest for families and for those looking to get away into the desert? From our walking trails to Bottomless Lake State Park to Bitter Lakes State Refuge, we're a hop, skip, and a jump away from the mountains of Ruidoso, and so much more. Outdoor activities abound here in Roswell. But we also have the iconic UFO Museum, several incredible art museums, a planetarium, and so much more for families to do and see. Or, for those who are curious into the Roswell incident, there is some serious areas of research and fascinating stories for you to discover while you're here. A great place to start is by visiting seeroswell.com. That's seeroswell.com. And there you'll find a whole list of places for you to play, stay, shop, eat, and a list of events happening throughout our community all year long. From the UFO Festival to our Dragonfly Festival and so much more. That's seeroswell.com. If I told you I saw a UFO, something unexplained flying through the sky, you might respond with curiosity and wonder, what could it be? We seem to accept that there are things outside our current knowledge that could account for being a UFO. If I told you I was abducted by a UFO and witnessed aliens, would you still be filled with wonder, or would you be filled with suspicion? Somehow the leap to abductions is a big one to stomach. I get it. Personally, I think most of the stories of abductions seem like versions of psychotic breaks. Being a trained psychologist, I've read and studied a lot of psychotic breaks that were well documented and observed. It is very easy for me to believe that the reported abductions we hear about are just that, hallucinations of the mind in extraordinary circumstances. But that can't always be a go-to explanation for abduction stories. Some of them don't fit the mold of psychotic breaks. And our resident ufologist, Dennis Balthaser, tends to agree.
There are two cases that I put a lot of confidence in as far as abductions. Best case for me is Travis Walton, Fire in the Sky. He worked for the Forest Service in Arizona. The museum has a big display on him. I've known Travis for 27 years. We've done lectures together. We've had dinner together at night with the families. He's one of the few people I ever met. You can look in his eyes and know he experienced something. He claims to have been abducted for 5 days. Working in the Forest Service, him and six other guys were coming out in a pickup truck, saw a light in the forest. He made the mistake of getting out of the truck, walking towards the light, and he was gone for 5 days. The guys that were with him were accused of murdering him. They sent out search parties trying to find him. They couldn't find him. He wrote a book. They did a movie called Fire in the Sky. He didn't like the movie. He rewrote the book because he didn't like the movie. It wasn't factual. But he has talked about being examined on the craft. And one of the things he told me one night at dinner was, he called them little guys. He said, I couldn't get up. I was on a table. He said, I was paralyzed. I couldn't move and I couldn't talk. But he said, I want to get up, kick the hell out of them little guys. And he couldn't do it. The other case that I put confidence in is Betty and Barney Hill. They were coming out of Canada to Connecticut, saw a UFO, got out of the vehicle, and both were abducted. Kathleen Martin is Betty's niece. She's the researcher. She has Betty's dress that was torn on the craft when they examined her. Later, under hypnosis, Betty had somehow been able to communicate with these entities and find out where they were from. Under hypnosis, years later, she drew a map of where they said they were from. That planet wasn't discovered until 10 years later.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Is there something to Travis Walton and Betty and Barney Hill's stories? Could it be more than psychosis? I don't know. There are many who claim their stories to be hoaxes. What is the evidence of them being hoaxes? Well, not much. Most critics cite these individuals' modest financial gain as being evidence that they were made-up stories. They were in it for the money. If so, then it wasn't much money. Some stories defy our easy go-to explanation. Most abductions are not believable, in my opinion. But some are just different. Different. Like Hank and John and Denise, their story is just different. If this was all just a ploy to get money, then let me assure you, it hasn't been much money. I'm not saying that we must take all unbelievable stories and accept them as fact until proven fiction. I am saying that instead of writing off these hard-to-believe claims from the get-go, things like abductions, we should give them respect and care. Maybe the truth behind them is more complicated, but we will never discover that complicated truth unless we take the time to listen to them and treat the person with compassion.
When it comes to approaching these unbelievably wild stories, and no matter how you look at it, they are.
Yeah.
What wisdom can you share with us that will help us approach these without losing your head or finding yourself getting lost in a fantastical story?
I don't, like I said earlier, I don't do abductions. That's not part of my research. I have an interest in it from a distance. I tried for 30 years because of my engineering background to look at facts. Theories don't get you anywhere.
What is it about their story that has brought us this far? Perhaps it is the hidden truth underneath it all. It is a reality that is felt by many, even today. In fact, when I discovered the truth about Hank's past, it sank my heart and reminded me of something from my own family's history. We will get right back to the episode, but briefly I want to thank our episode sponsor, Hangar 209. Hangar 209 is actually my neighbor downtown. They're right next to our jewelry store. And they're one of the best places in town to get your Roswell gear, souvenir, apparel, and so much more. You can also check them out online and shop online with them at hangar209.com. While there's a lot of cool Roswell gear, I have to tell you, some of my favorite stuff is their coffee. I love the coffee brand that they carry. And I have to warn you, this coffee is strong. It's going to wake you up in the morning. Go to hangar209.com and get your Roswell gear straight from the Roswell source and Roswell locals. Or if you're here in Roswell, we'll just venture right across the street from the UFO Center and you will see Hangar 209 located next to one certain jewelry store and get your Roswell gear while you're here. Hangar 209, the place to get your Roswell gear.
What were you told about Poppy's military service when you were growing up as a kid?
Well, I knew that my dad went into World War II very much of his own desire. And the story was told to me that he actually lied about his age so that he could go in early. So in the Army is where he learned to become a pilot. I know before the pilot training, he actually was a medic as well. Spent some time over in Japan and eventually became a POW.
Poppy was the name we grandkids called my grandfather on my mother's side. And that voice is my mom, Terry. She is one of five children, or rather one of many more after her mother remarried to Poppy when my mother was a kid. Mom has been invested in genealogy, much like Ethan has for his family, and she has traced our family history back well into the 1600s. She's been the primary keeper of our family's story. My grandfather fought in World War II as a very young man and came back with quite a story to tell. Poppy claimed to be a POW in Japan, that he was treated very well by the Japanese, and upon their surrender he came back to America with a new lease on life and a tattered Japanese flag covered in Japanese writing that was displayed proudly in his living room. We never spoke of the flag or his service in the military, and his service records were mostly destroyed in a fire at a Veterans Record Center years ago.
Did you ever have doubts or wonder if Pop wasn't telling the full story of what his military life was like or something that he might be hiding in his military career?
I never did as a child. His stories were exciting to me and bigger than life. I had a great respect for him, especially knowing he had been in a prisoner of war camp in Japan. He had come back with a Japanese flag that we were told was given to him from the actual Japanese camp director when they were liberated. And I was always amazed that he had such a love for Japan and for the people. He never had anger or animosity and always wanted to go back to Japan. And that made me very proud of him. It wasn't until I got older and some things came to light that made me question whether or not everything he told us really happened.
If you had definitive proof that Pop's story wasn't what he told you, some of those things that came up later in life, and you had solid evidence about that, would it change how you feel about him? Would it change how you feel about his service?
Yes and no. And I think that's why, as I got older and questioned some things, the whole Japanese flag, for instance, I brought a friend of mine home one time who was very fluent in Japanese and explained to me that the flag was actually not from a prisoner of war camp, that it was an actual personal burial flag. And it made me question some things, and it made me wonder about why he would say one thing when really it probably was another. And I think once the shock wears off and you wonder why anybody would tell you something different other than what really happened, you have to walk a mile in their shoes. Is it fear? Is it the loneliness of being thousands of miles away from home? Is it guilt? We all kind of have our own embellishments, I guess is the word. Why do any of us embellish? And if we are willing to look deeper, I think we'll find the reason. And it's not always bad. I wasn't a 17-year-old in the South Pacific in a war that I didn't create. And I can't imagine the fear. Can't imagine the loneliness. I can't imagine the separation. The sacrifice, it's a sacrifice I've never made. So no, I think I will always honor him, regardless if half of his stories were true or not.
And that's empathy, right?
Right.
My grandfather didn't tell the whole story of his military service, and I think I understand why. War is complicated. It's brutal. For those who have seen it or been in it, they understand something that hopefully none of the rest of us will. And trying to explain it to someone else so that they could understand would be hard, if not impossible, to do. The unspeakable traumatic horror of war is profound, and it leaves a mark. I've come to believe that Poppy left the flag on the wall as a sign of respect. It was complicated. I don't think he was necessarily hiding anything. But he had stories that he definitely didn't want to share with the rest of us. The hidden truth of his story was a reality that was hard to believe for many of us. Hank was the same way. He had a story that he and John and Denise did not want to share with me, and I very much respect that. Perhaps this was a long setup to get to a point, but I think it's important. If I just told you what the lie was in Hank's past from the beginning of this episode, it would be sensational. It would be a device to manipulate you into shock value. That's not what I want to do. The truth is, Hank's past and his military service was complicated. It was traumatic. It was hard. Like the flag on my grandfather's wall, Hank's service carried with it a number of untold stories that haunted him until the very end. Hank's story is not one that should be sensationalized. No veteran's story should be sensationalized. It should be respected. In fact, anyone with difficult, traumatizing, or painful histories should receive respect and care, even if their stories come across unbelievable at first. So, with that, please take this reveal with respect. It came right in the middle of Ethan's email to me. It read, "My grandfather Hank was discharged from the military honorably, but he had a messy record. I'm sure he was shell-shocked and lived with PTSD. He wasn't the same after his time in the service, but it was a different time then. In your podcast, John mentioned that Hank died in a motorcycle accident. That is simply not true. The truth about his death is something that my family, especially my mother, does not like to talk about. And I have no doubt that his military service had a huge contributing factor in it. But the fact is, Hank committed suicide." On the next episode of Crashed in Roswell, we look into the inconsistencies of the original Roswell UFO story and show how things may not line up as well as we like. Plus, I'll uncover a few more lies and truths in John and Denise's story. That's next time on Crashed in Roswell, Survivors in a Misunderstood City. My thanks to Ryan Bishop, Boyd Barrett, Dennis Balthaser, and David Langford for help on this podcast. My thanks to Brian Hunley for writing our theme song. If you like the show, do us a favor by liking, subscribing, following the podcast, and leaving us a review. You can also check out more by going to crashedinroswell.com for behind-the-scenes content, crashed merchandise, and much, much more. You can also check out some of my other work at kylerbullock.com.